I mean, that was a legal scenario with a legal answer. Whether or not someone's in a residential facility or not, they have assigned guardians who have decision-making authority over their medical well-being and educational interventions and services. So if the parents are still the guardians per se, which we're going to assume that's the case in this situation, and she's a minor, then there is no legal reality on the planet Earth barred her immediate danger that anyone is entitled to keep them from being able to access her in any way, shape, or form. So,
yeah, but
now hold on. So, logistical questions aside, like it can't be a plan to intervene or control behavior or whatever. The plan can't be you can't see your guardian because that creates problems.
Hey, did you know you can actually earn BACBCUs if you're listening to this episode? If you'd like to learn more, including about our Behavior Analyst Certification Board CEUs, that is Continuing Education Units for people that hold the credentials by the BACB, you can go to explanatoryfiction.com and find this episode. Welcome to Explanatory Fiction. It's very important that you know how this podcast is structured. We've randomly generated this case. The variables are entirely fictional. That's right, because with the power of math and science, you can actually do these things now. In fact, the name Charmaine Coudrette was randomly generated too. And the episode art, you guessed it, also made by artificial intelligence. But the best part is our team is real and the conversations that ensue are designed as a game that you get to play along with us. In each episode, we have one person that is evaluating the case from a clinical decision-making model, and the others are accomplices of mine who are trying to stump the analyst. Our challenge to you is, can you figure out a possible treatment model before us? Here we go. Charmaine is a 17-year-old young woman who lives in Waterville, Ohio. She recently moved to a residential facility due to the severity of her behavior. She was emergency admitted due to aggression and property destruction and at the direction of her parents due to safety concerns. Her communication is limited in short 2-3 word phrases that typically include communicating demands or requests that she can make of herself too. Her parents want to be involved and have her return home, but whenever they visit the residential facility, her behavior amplifies to unsafe levels. As a result, her parents feel like they're losing their daughter and they're afraid that they may not be able to have her in their life in the future. So Max, you are midway through your 2023 Behavior Bus Tour, where you're taking consultation cases as you follow your favorite band in the world as they tour the country, Modest Mouse. You picked up the legacy of the old, late, great Gerald Jerry Mertens, may he rest in peace, who used to take students on psychology tours out of St. Cloud University, taking students through the Midwestern and Eastern USA to different hotbeds of behavior analytic training. So as you roll into Ohio on your current leg of the trip, you receive a call from Conrad, Charmaine's father, and you stop by his house to start your intake.
Hey, how's it going? You must be Max.
Hi, yeah. Nice to meet you. Conrad?
Yeah, I'm Conrad. Nice to meet you. Come on in. We can talk a little bit about Charmaine.
Awesome, yeah. What's going on?
So, well, she's not here. Charmaine lives in a residential facility that's close. Okay. She was here. Actually, we really didn't see anything as intense previously before we moved here, and then we moved here, and her behavior really escalated to a place where we had to do some emergency placements in facilities that were temporary stays, and then honestly, her behavior was just, it got extreme when we'd visit, and we haven't really been able to get her back into our house.
Okay, so just to keep up, you guys recently moved to Ohio, and then there were some behaviors, and you looked at some residential options for her. Where'd you move from?
So, well, we moved here about 2.5 years ago when I got a new job, and okay. Then before, when we were living out west, she would have behaviors at home, but we could typically redirect her to her room. Like, she was at an ABA school, so we heard a lot about what we should be doing, and we have that safe place we can send her to where she can go and calm herself down.
Gotcha.
And she did pretty well. And then we moved here, and I don't know what, maybe the new house, but there was no calm. We weren't able to get her to calm. So there were a couple incidences that reached levels where we had to call EMTs, and they ended up removing her and putting her in a temporary stay in a hospital.
Oh, wow. Sorry you guys are going through that. How long has she been in the residential facility now?
She's been in, I want to say, about 9 months. She was put into the facility where she is now. She did a temporary stay there before, and then we didn't really, they determined it wasn't necessarily safe to come back to the house prior, but she's been a permanent resident there for about 9 months.
Okay. And how often do you visit?
A lot less now. We tried to visit, I mean, weekly in the beginning when what to just to be able to see her, make sure she's doing okay. But every time we go there, she gets pretty amped up.
Gotcha.
So they've kind of kindly asked us, or we haven't really been able to coordinate for us to go back in and at a couple months now, just because it got to a really busy, hectic place when we would go there. And I feel like they're trying to keep the peace over there. And that's kind of
gotcha.
The devastating part is that we just can't see her.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a really tough situation all around. I'd love to talk more about kind of some of the behaviors you guys started seeing when you moved here, as well as what you're seeing when you are able to go visit her. But before we do, I kind of want to look at the variables that changed a bit with the move, because it kind of seems like that was, at least as you're describing it now, the antecedent to some of the onset of these more frequent and intense behaviors. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So before she would get up to that high level, but she was able to come down because she'd go to a room and she would calm herself down. And then since we've moved here, she hasn't calmed down. And then we have to go in and try to help her to stop her from hitting windows or things that could be damaging. So then that's what ended up having the squad be called. So, yeah, I guess it I don't know if it was the move or this house or whatever it was that changed, but something changed. And now what was working before stopped working.
Gotcha. Was she going to an ABA school when you guys got to Ohio, or did you look at other options?
So she was at one of those schools. And then when we came here, we started her off with one and she would refuse to go inside. I think they gave it maybe like 2 weeks or something like that. And then they just, that was the beginning of it of her going to that school. So they dismissed us because we weren't able to make progress. So we tried to set her up with the district and at least just try to get her some input, fulfill that educational criteria. It just didn't work. They were trying to come in and give us work and things, and we just never really got established with the district and then the hospitalizations.
Gotcha. I gotcha. Oh, wow. You've mentioned these behaviors occurring frequently. When you visit, has the residential facility cued you in at all as to what a typical day for her is looking like these days without you guys there?
Yeah, we'll shoot them a call and they'll tell us if she's having a good day or kind of not a good day. We like to keep in the loop if there are big incidences that happen there, but it seems like they've got a pretty good handle on it. So maybe it doesn't reach a super high level like we were seeing here when it's there.
Okay.
But it does start to amp up to there when we're visiting. So that's kind of why we're accepting that we're not really going there right now.
Gotcha. Understood. How thorough of an answer do you get from the residential facility when you call and kind of check in? Is it usually she's doing great, or are they giving you the details?
I mean, Linus he's pretty good, man. He tells us what kind of stuff they're doing and when they're trying to do her, fulfill her educational pieces there. I think they're working really hard to try to get their folks in on it. I don't know. That's what it seems like.
Okay.
You know, I appreciate their honesty that they kind of labeled or told us that it tends to be like when we're there is some of the tougher stuff that they're seeing. And
yeah,
that's not an easy conversation to have. So I'm putting some faith in them right now, because yeah, we're a little bit at a loss.
Yeah, that sounds pretty intense, but I'm glad that you can trust in Linus and the rest of the team to kind of keep you in the know. Yeah, I'd love to talk to Linus a little bit. Is there a chance that I could possibly go to the residential facility at some point?
Yeah, no, you have my permission. I mean, awesome. I can sign whatever, but no, I think that'd be great.
Awesome. Before I touch base with Linus, what's your overall goal for Charmaine? I mean, are you wanting to get her back home? Are you wanting her to kind of stay in a residential but move towards like an assisted living situation? Do you just want to be able to visit her where she's at?
I mean, if we talk dreams, then I would love to have her back.
Okay.
We never expected for her to be in a residential facility. I mean, we adopted her and we wanted her. We want to have her. And
absolutely.
Even with these challenges. So, but I would accept a lot less than her living with us. Like I just don't want to lose connection with Charmaine. We've been building this relationship for years, and you know, Alice and I, we want to maintain that connection with our daughter.
Yeah. Do you guys ever talk to her on the phone by chance?
Well, that's, you'll meet her, but that's not really feasible. She mostly only scripts phrases for like a couple words. She'll say some words that she'll repeat, but we're not able to have a meaningful conversation on the phone.
Understood. All right. Well, I'd like to get in touch with Linus, and I'll be in touch with you soon, Conrad, if that works for you.
Yeah, that's fine. And, you know, I'm happy to be on conference call or whatever if you guys have questions while you're there and whatever you need.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time. I'll be in touch.
Of course. Sure.
Max, so you roll over in your sweet 1978 V-dub bus to go knock on the door and say what's up to Linus.
Hello?
Hey, I'm looking for Linus.
Yeah, I'm Linus. What's up, man?
Hey, not a whole lot. How you doing?
All right.
Good to hear. I'd actually love to talk to you if you have some time today.
Who are you, man?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name's Max. I'm a BCBA. I recently met with one of your residents' parents. They've got some concerns about her behavior, and I just would love to touch base with you, kind of ask about what you've been seeing here in the facility, as well as, I mean, potentially observe her and meet her if that works for you.
I mean, yeah, man, it normally works for me. Give me one second. Let me check something.
Cool.
I'm looking for a release. All right, man, I see your name here on the list. All right, yeah, Max, okay, yeah. No one, they didn't tell me what time you're going to come by. So yeah, you want to come inside or you want to just talk you out on here on the porch?
I'd love to come in if that's all right.
Yeah, man, come on in.
Cool. Can you give me a bit of a rundown on Charmaine? What's going on? What are you guys seeing here?
I mean, she's a real sweet girl. You know, she's been with us for a little bit.
Okay.
You know, it's been a little tough for her. She's been struggling. Really likes to keep to herself, stay in her bedroom a lot. Not really come out.
Can I ask what she's struggling with? Is it just the kind of staying in her room? Or?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, she's really just staying in her room and not coming out. When she does come out, she's got some problems. But like, really, we've just been kind of leaving her alone, let her do her own thing. You know, she likes to stay in her bedroom. We call it her dark blanket fort. You know, she just likes the darkness.
Man. Okay. She's a bit of a lone wolf.
Yeah, she just sleeps a lot. You know, we try not, you know, listen, she's a teenager. We like to give her privacy. You know, I don't like to interrupt her and make sure the staff know not to interrupt her, especially, you know, if, you know, she's doing some adult stuff up there by herself. You know, we like to respect people's privacy here at the house.
Adult stuff. Can you tell me a bit more?
Yeah, man. You know, like, you know, just like, you know, adult stuff, like, you know, being alone and, you know, doing adult stuff. I mean, I don't know how specific we're trying to get here, bro. Like, what are you
trying to do? I guess I'm just trying to figure out what she's doing with all her time. I feel like adult stuff could mean PG-13 movies, and it could also mean masturbation.
Well, I'm thinking Showtime After Dark. By herself.
Okay. Oh, so she watches it?
No, I mean, man, no. She's by herself. Okay. She's alone in the dark underneath her blanket fort, and, like, you know, it seems like she's busy.
Like, all the time?
I mean, I don't know about all the time, but frequently, you know, we leave her up there enough to where she's not leaving the room enough.
Gotcha. Okay. And I mean, is she still coming out for mealtime and all that stuff? What's that look like?
Yeah, man. I mean, meals or whatever, like she eats, she's got a perfectly good diet. I mean, the big thing that we're worried about, not even worried about, it's just more like what happens is that, you know, we try not to rock the boat with her because, you know, if you rock the boat, you do the interruptions, you know, that creates problems. You know, and we don't want no problems.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, you've got a house to maintain. Absolutely. I mean, when she comes down for meals, is she in and out? She got any buddies here?
I mean, she doesn't really care about the other kids, man. It's not really like that. You know, she waves, she says hi, whatever. But she just seems really sad, you know, and just seems real quiet. And she's just real into her thing. Okay. And, you know, we just kind of let her go.
Sad. Does she cry a lot or is she just reclusive?
I mean, sometimes we'll see some crying, but for the most part, it's just, you know, she comes out when, you know, she comes out basically to get food and she goes back into her bedroom and that's about it.
Gotcha. Can you tell me a little bit more of like the layout of this place? Does she have like a general caretaker? Do people kind of work with her in shifts? Does she spend most?
You familiar with what we do with these houses, man? You've been around these houses like ours before, or how much information you really need?
I mean, it's been a minute.
Okay, I mean, there's no specific people that are assigned. You know, it's more like general caretakers. It's for us. It's about keeping the ratio. You know, support the people, keep the ratio, keep people safe, as happy as we can. You know, because especially since I've been a house manager now for quite a few years, man, it's hard to maintain these staff. So I don't like to push people for beyond what's reasonable. So I mean, they come in and their job is to make sure that the kids can have, you know, live a good life, have fun, and keep people happy. So we can minimize.
Gotcha. Friction, I hear you.
You know.
Yeah. No. I mean, I too am in a field with a large amount of turnover. So I get it. You want to keep the peace. Her dad, Conrad, has been telling me that there's been troubles when they try to visit. Can you give me a little bit of a rundown of what happens when they try and visit her?
I mean, bro, we don't know. It's just something about when they show up. You know, within 5-10 minutes, she's just not having it. Becomes a rough situation. Gotcha. A lot of screaming and crying and just frustration and anger. She breaks some stuff. So, you know, we've been trying to limit that. You know, we obviously want the family to be here. We're not trying to keep them away necessarily like that, but we're just trying to figure out a way to transition her into the house full time in a way that, you know, keeps her in a good positive mental space.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I mean, what's it look like when she's getting upset? Does she throw furniture, aggress towards you guys, towards her
parents?
She'll
break whatever's in her hands. Like, she's not super strong, right? But I mean, like, still she gets frustrated enough to where, like, if there's something in her immediate reach, like, she'll grab it. She'll, like, you know, grind it, break it, whatever. Like, you know, like she stomped on the remote control for the television, right? She, like, broke it with her hands and stuff and threw it against the wall. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
She'll throw some stuff, like, you know, coasters or like a drink or something. So it's not like she's flipping tables or, like, you know, trying to break the couch or anything, but like it's like she's really, really upset in a deep place.
And what usually calms her down?
And that's another thing too, like, we don't know, man. I mean, as soon as we get her back to her room, or like we offer her some other situations, that's about it. You know, we try to keep her away. We clear out the other kids, other folks in the house, try to give her as much space as humanly possible. And as long as we do that, she's good. I mean, look, man, she doesn't like to be around people so much that, like, we're in a situation where we'll even give her showers later at night so that she can avoid being around the other people in the house.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
She's a sweet kid, obviously, you know, but she's quiet, keeps to herself. But again, like, I mean, she does spend a little too much. Like, if it was my kid, I'd be worried how much time she's spending by herself and, you know, being a little too adult, too much all the time, kind of lost in that. And then just, like, not being able to handle other people. It's pretty intense. And watching the anxiety that comes from that, you know, I'd be worried about it for my kid. You know, I'm worried about it and she's not my kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you. I want to come back to this adult time thing. Like, I know you definitely don't have, like, any sort of idea of how frequently she's doing it. I mean, the door's closed. She's under the blanket, but I mean, is this something she's ever engaged in, like, in the entryway?
No, nothing like that, man. Like I said, we kind of have, like, a don't ask, don't tell policy. You know what I mean? We respect people's boundaries. Okay. She's up there. It's just, you know, teenager stuff.
All right. I'd love to, go up and meet her if that's all right.
Yeah. Word.
You think she'll come
out? One thing now that I think about it, that might matter. She just had a change in some of her meds. And
okay, what kind of meds are we talking about?
Man, I'd have to get the list for you. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Do you know if she's got any other diagnoses besides autism?
You know, she's got social anxiety and moderate intellectual disability, I think, is on her paperwork, you know, but really she's just a little slow. You know, she just takes a little time to come to things. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with her, honestly. She's just, you know, an introvert, you know.
Introvert. I mean, what happens when someone new comes into the
facility? I'm telling you, man, people are a problem. Every time there's people involved, and we see it over and over and over again throughout the day. If people get involved, we see problems. I mean, it could happen up to 10 times a day.
The sight of people, the sound of people, the interaction of people.
I mean, exposure to people, man. She comes downstairs. If it's not a... I mean, we call her SEAL Team 6 kind of behind her back because, like, she's in and out. She comes in for the cereal. She's out. You know, it's, like, targeted.
If I sat on that couch over there at lunchtime and she just walked down the stairs, she gonna let me just
say if you were standing, like, on the, like if she's coming down the stairs and you're sitting on the stairs, what are you asking me?
No, like, if I go in the other room, the living room here where the couch is, and I sit here, I got a view of the kitchen table just where she's going to come eat. I'd kind of just love
no eye contact. It's going to be like straight down. Like, she's on a mission. She's coming down, getting her food. Okay. She's collecting it. She's filling up her hands with as much as she can grab. She's out.
All right.
And if you try to engage her too much, you can say hi, whatever. It can be gentle. But if you try to, like, stand in between her, like any of that kind of stuff, then you create problems, man. And hey, I just, okay. While we were sitting here, I just pulled out the paperwork. The medication was lithium. And it got pumped okay. up and
heavy stuff.
Yeah, and honestly, and that's the thing. Like, since it's been bumped up, we have seen some changes where she's getting a little okay. bit of, like, slurred speech, and you know, so she's a little. You know, I've been around the kids in our program for a long time. You know, and, like, they all get on pretty heavy medication yeah. regimens. I mean, a lot of time because they're here for that. You know. And, you know, she's definitely on the heavier side of sedated right now, I think is how I would think of it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, avoids eye contact. It's really tough.
Gotcha.
Max spends a little bit of time sitting back and observing. And when Charmaine comes out, he corroborates the information that was provided by Linus and everything checks out. It's just as Linus described.
Hey, Linus, thanks for letting me stop by today. I'd love to get on a conference call with you and Conrad here. In the next couple of days, if you don't mind, to just kind of talk about some strategies that you guys might be able to find. I know that this, I definitely don't want her to kind of bring the house down in terms of the burden that she's putting on staff. But I also, I mean, like you said, this adult behavior and just her quality of life right now, to be honest, it's bumming me out. And I want to kind of think about it a little bit, talk to Conrad. And get you some tools to help navigate Charmaine a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, man. Yeah, whatever. Whatever works, man. Yeah, yeah, okay. I'm there.
Cool. Hey. Well, it's great to meet you.
Yeah.
I'll be in touch.
As Max is leaving the house, he gets a call on his phone from Ava. Ava's the intervention specialist that was tasked to work with Charmaine when Charmaine and her family first moved to the area.
Hi, I'm Ava. I'm technically Charmaine's intervention specialist, but we never get to see her. She has been at this facility and enrolled in our school for the past 9 months, and other than sending work to the residents, we have not been able to work on her IEP on a consistent basis. The residential staff report that she gets aggressive when they try to transition her over to our school setting, so they don't try to bring her anymore. Her education plan says that she was on home instruction before this, and, you know, they moved into the area about 9 months ago. So I honestly didn't expect too much until her behavior was more under control. There are three categories. The first is daily living skills, which include her learning to fold her clothes, another of consistently making her bed, and there are a few hygiene goals, including brushing her teeth twice a day and showering every 2-3 days.
I'm sorry, for those daily living skills, showering, brushing teeth, hygiene, is she doing any of that right now, or are they basically put it on halt because of the behaviors?
Remember, I've only really seen her a couple of times, so when we do try these daily living skills out, we guide her and it doesn't go bad, but it's also not super smooth. We're able to say that we did them, but they need more work. Our overarching goal here is to get her more independent and presentable. She also has a goal for completing 2-step tasks, like getting up and finding a healthy snack. The second category is her functional communication goal. She previously was using a PEC system, but we've been building upon her 2-3 word utterances since she hasn't been able to get into a consistent school routine. They said once she's able to attend, she'll be able to get an SLP to come in for an updated assessment. And the last category is her 2 behavior goals include transitioning from a preferred activity with no more than 2 reminders and without hitting or throwing things, and then the goal to decrease sleeping by 10%. But the baseline is way old, like when she was at her old school in 2019.
And what was that baseline?
Oh boy, let me see. It was averaging 4.5 to 5 hours per school day. So basically all day. I need to run. Please call back if you need anything else. Goodbye.
Conrad continues driving down the road in that sweet V-dub bus on his little behavior bus tour. More on that later. And on his drive, he calls Conrad back, Charmaine's father.
Hey, Conrad, it's Max.
Hey, Max.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How did your observation or your meeting go at the residential facility?
It went all right. I got an opportunity to see Charmaine for a brief moment. I got to talk to Linus a bit. Great guy. Super helpful. Sounds like they're taking good care of her there. I did kind of want to talk about some of the things that he noted to me, as well as kind of talk about some of her IEP goals, kind of where she was at before the residential options for her. I guess I'll just rip the first bandaid off quickly.
Yeah.
Linus was communicating to me that she's been engaging in a lot of, he didn't say the word masturbatory, he heavily implied it when I spoke to him. Is that something you guys ever saw at home before, or?
It did happen at home. It started picking, I guess since she's been going through puberty. We adopted her at the age of 12, so it was pretty soon after that. But it wasn't like a constant. When that would happen, we would typically point her off in the direction of her room and have her go to her room because, that's where that's going to happen.
Okay.
It wasn't constant. It wasn't everywhere. It was just a few times that we had to redirect her to go to her room.
Okay. Like a few times ever, a few times a week, a few times a day.
We started off pretty strong on that when it would come up, but it wasn't a constant, to be honest. So like maybe a few times a year for the first couple years, and then she would spend a lot of time in her room anyway, and we wouldn't necessarily go in there. So I guess we didn't.
Fair enough.
We didn't have to point her in that direction too much anymore.
Fair enough. I mean, ever since she hit puberty, has she kind of just had unfettered access to the internet and that sort of thing?
She doesn't really spend time on the internet.
Okay.
She doesn't really care about screens too much. She'll watch stuff she used to. We used to try to watch stuff together, but she doesn't really have an iPad or we used to, but then that was one of the first things that would get thrown when she would get pumped up. So we don't really have an iPad, and that was mostly a speech device that we were practicing anyway.
Understood. And then I was talking to Ava about the IEP, and it seems like some of the data that they've got is pretty outdated, and they're working through some stuff. But I just kind of wanted to touch base on a couple of her goals and get your thoughts on at least where she was at before she left you guys. If that's all right with you.
Yeah.
Awesome. So they mentioned that she's got some life skill goals, brushing her teeth, showering. Is that something she would do regularly at home? Was it with heavy prompting? Was it a fight? What was that like?
Well, I know they were practicing it at school because it was a little bit of a struggle at home. Okay. She would do it with us. It just, she didn't have the ability to, like, some of those activities take a while.
Yeah.
And we know where she is at her IQ level, and it's something where she doesn't look at schedules or anything. So like we tried a lot of stuff from the old school and we tried to work our way through it. But I mean, we had some good folks tell us that the dangers of people not being able to take care of themselves in the bathroom when they're growing up. So we were just trying to prioritize the things that were going to make her as most independent as possible.
What I'm trying to kind of touch on here or dive deeper into is, if you had to guess with these hygiene and life skills, do you think it's based on what I've heard from some of her behaviors of concern, do you think it's more of a can't do or a won't do if you had to guess?
I know this is not the answer you're looking for, but I feel like it's a combination of both. I feel like she doesn't want to do it because it's uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if Linus mentioned, but we assume a trauma history because she has some scars and things on her back from times before.
Oh, wow.
But she was pretty good with us in trying to work through these things, and even helpers we've had come to the house before, once they warmed up, it was somewhat okay. But she definitely can't do it independently right now. Not yet.
Understood.
Because we didn't really push through and work ourselves out of that equation.
Yeah. So Conrad, I just want to, after talking to Linus a bit, I kind of want to just ask you a couple questions about what Charmaine's day-to-day looked like when she was living with you. I mean, right now, from what Linus is telling me, she's pretty reclusive. She stays in her room most of the day. She'll come out to eat. That was actually the only time I saw her. She didn't make eye contact with me, and she walked into her room immediately after. No contact with anybody. And is that kind of what you were seeing before the move, before she went to residential?
She's always slept a lot and enjoyed her space and enjoyed spending time in her room. She used to kind of, she had a beanbag, and she would pull her comforter up over herself and just kind of lay down on her beanbag and chill out up there. No music or anything going on, but she would come down and spend some time with us. Like for meals, she would eat with us and, well, we would help her. We'd help her with some things. And I mean, she was always a little bit, I guess, reclusive, but okay. I mean, she's adopted. Like, it's hard to build those bonds, especially when you have kind of an intellectual disability. Like it takes a long time. I imagine it takes a long time to build those relationships. So we were really patient with her and trying to be as supportive and caring as possible.
Absolutely. And it sounds like you guys did exactly that. And I, based on what Linus was telling me and what you've told me, I think that residential in the moment was the right call. And I know it's a tough call to make, and I know you guys want her home. So when I went there a little bit, I was trying to look at maybe why she's protesting your presence. I think the first step is getting you guys in a room together again. I know that your ultimate goal is to have her home. I think that's going to take time. You're absolutely right that it takes time to build the relationship. And I think with time she's been gone, it's going to take a little bit of extra time compared to what you were seeing on the day to day. So that being
I know that the original reason that we're not really going there anymore is because it's going to lead to behaviors in the home. And, you know, I have a pretty good relationship with Linus, and I want to see Charmaine. Like, Alice and I want to go, and we want to visit our daughter.
Absolutely.
How are we going to make sure that that doesn't strain what we have going on with Linus and with the home right now?
Well, I think you got to look at it as a very slow process. You got to break it down into smaller steps, than probably smaller than you have been up to this point. I imagine you guys are pretty excited when you get there to see her most of the time.
We were hesitant towards the end in the past few times we tried to go there, because just of what had happened previously. It's kind of a bummer, and it's,
yeah,
while we want to see her, it's, we're a little bit scared of what's going to happen and where it's going to go.
Just so I make sure that I'm on the right track with the advice, I don't want you to try something that's been tried before. Can you tell me what the last time you saw her was like? You going in there, you talking to her, what was said? Yeah. What'd she do?
Alice and I went in, and we had some snacks with us, and we were like, Charmaine, we're coming. And like, we knocked on her door, and we were like, hey, it's us. And we like went in, and we turned on the light, and we went to go sit down. And then she started to get, she started like wringing her hands a little bit. And she said, she hit.
Gotcha. Did she end up hitting you?
No.
Okay.
She didn't. She started standing up, and then we were like, hey, no, it's okay. We went over and tried to get a little bit closer and stop so she wouldn't, because that's how we used to try to calm her down. And then when she started yelling, and she kept pumping up. So we just kind of, we worked our way out, and
yeah,
we apologized to the staff, and
gotcha.
We just kind of hung our heads and went home.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you guys really tried your best. You came with snacks. I'm sure they were her favorites. So it's gotta be heartbreaking to kind of walk in trying your best and walk out to that. So I'd like to troubleshoot some ideas with you. And then kind of propose them to Linus after we wrap up here, and kind of see if we can all be on the same page about it. I think that, at least from what I've seen of Charmaine, social interaction right now, of any kind, whether it be from her loving parents or from her caretakers at the residential facility, is just not her cup of tea. And I know that that's really hard to accept as a parent, that she's not necessarily wanting her favorite candy that she used to love. But I think that to build back the relationship, it's going to be some baby steps. And I think that, honestly, it's going to be a matter of slowly reintroducing yourself to her, and making yourself familiar by proxy. And what I mean by that is, I mean, I was talking to Linus and I asked to Observer and Meter, and he basically told me that wasn't going to happen because of the behaviors that you noted earlier. And so when I did see her, I sat in a couch across the room and she came down, got her food, didn't make eye contact. I filled you in on all this already, but I'd like to try a similar approach for you guys coming in and just being present with her. You don't necessarily, like, it's going to be hard because I know you haven't seen her in a minute, but you might not even engage with her. You might just be kind of sitting in the same room, and she might not even make eye contact with you. But reintroducing yourself in a way that is not going to totally disrupt the life that she's created for herself in the residential facility is going to help you repair those relationships. And over time, you can, I mean, when you're sitting in the room, I mean, bring those snacks with you. Sit on the couch, have them present, have them available. Keep any verbiage out of it. I mean, if she just walks by, she just walks by. Over time, we can start looking at building back that relationship, slowly taking smaller steps. I think that right now, her the only time she really comes out of her room is for showers and for lunch. I think a good goal right now would be to get to a point where you guys are sitting at the lunch table with her and having a small conversation. I think that's going to be our first milestone that we hit, but I think it's going to take a minute to get there. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on that.
I mean, I'm going to be happy to be in the room with her to start off, but I don't know if I'm necessarily prepared to concede that she's going to be in this kind of residential facility or place forever. Like,
absolutely. And I mean, honestly, I saw her for as long as it takes to go fill a plate and go back to her room. So I really can't speak to whether or not she's going to be in this residential facility long term or if there's a chance she's coming home. But step one is building that foundation back. And I think that these are going to be the steps that we need to take to do that.
What are the signs that we're going to see to know that it's working if we're just kind of sitting across the room watching her go in and out?
I mean, last time she saw you, she was pretty upset. She said she hit. If she sees you this time and she doesn't say she hit, you're making some gains. You got to look at those small gains. Each step is a victory on its own. And that's where I'm really going to need you and your wife to be patient on this, because it is a slow process. I'd like to get you, me, and Linus on the phone and lay out my idea. If mom's around and she wants to get on the phone, that'd be awesome too. Does that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to trust you as much as I'm going to trust someone that I just met. I called you and I want to keep this conversation going and see if what you're talking about starts to work. And
I understand. Absolutely. And I mean, we're here to make database decisions. It's what we do. So, I mean, I'll be checking in at every one of those milestones and ensure that we're making progress. And if we aren't making progress, troubleshooting how we can. So do you mind if I phone in Linus for the rest of this call?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Awesome.
Oh, hey, man, what's up?
Hey, Linus.
What's up, man?
This is Max, the BCBA from the other
day. Yeah, what's up, Max?
Came to see Charmaine?
Yeah.
Cool. I got Conrad on the phone with me. We're talking.
Hi, Conrad. What's up, man?
There he is. We're kind of talking about goals for Charmaine and what we're gonna do to kind of repair the relationship with the family a little bit, maybe get her out of her room for slightly longer durations, and look at kind of getting some social interaction in her life. Are you open to some suggestions on how we can potentially get Conrad and his wife back in the residential facility safely and in a way that works for everyone?
Yeah, man, whatever. Yeah.
Awesome. I would love to have Conrad and Alice come out and basically do what I did today or yesterday, where they just kind of hang out. They're not going to engage with Charmaine. They're just going to make themselves present in the room and then head out. They might not even talk to her. We definitely want the ball to be in Charmaine's court so that we don't kind of see any of those behaviors that have required you to I mean, evacuate the building.
Yeah, yeah, man. I mean, we want to support the families reuniting as fast as possible. One thing I got to ask is, you know, we got to kind of short staffed and it's kind of hard to deal with everything if she gets heightened, you know, and I really can't afford to have more staff out. So what are we supposed to do here if it gets out of
control? We're going to have some firm termination criteria. If Conrad and Alice are there and she's so much as gives a single she hit, they're going to walk out the door, no questions asked. And Charmaine can go back to her room. To start out, they're not even going to be engaging with her. We're going to do a slowly tiered system over time. So the first, we're going to come up with mastery criteria for kind of each step in the phase. So the first is her just tolerating Conrad and Alice sitting on the couch where I sat and watching as she comes down to eat her food. They're going to have some of her preferred items from home, but there's going to be no pressure on her to even look at them. From there, we're going to slowly decrease the distance from where they're sitting away from her. And once they're at a distance at the kitchen table with her, we're going to start introducing just like single word phrases to make their presence known to her if she hasn't acknowledged them yet. And over time, we're going to start to branch out on the conversations that they're having or the time that they're spending together even. But again, it's going to be totally in Charmaine's court. If it reaches a point that makes anyone uncomfortable, then we've got that termination criteria to get out of here and be on our way. I'm going to be in close contact with Conrad and Alice to kind of check on progress, see how each day is going on a day-to-day basis. I mean, we'll check in weekly, but we'll get the day-to-day. And from there, make the moves we got to make. But it's going to be a slow process, and the goal is to not push Charmaine further than she wants to go, but really try and encourage that social interaction with her parents so that we can start taking the steps that we need to get her home.
Yeah, man. Whatever works for us. I mean, we'll give it a go.
Awesome. Thanks. I really appreciate your time. I'd love to start this tomorrow if that works for you.
Sure. Yeah.
Conrad, how does that sound for you?
That sounds great. No, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'll be in touch. Conrad, you got my number if you need anything. I'm going to go ahead and remove myself from tomorrow's encounter just because I know that Charmaine would prefer less people. But feel free to give me a call if you need anything. And remember that termination criteria. If it gets too intense, we're stepping out and just heading home. I know that's going to be hard, Dad. In the long run, it's going to be what helps repair this relationship.
Yeah, I'm just excited to be able to see Charmaine again and, you know, be able to go and visit her. I know Alice feels the same way.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
You made it. This is the point in which you can pause. Think about what you maybe would have done differently. Think if there's any themes throughout this as well. We're going to break character here, and this just turns into a typical podcast where it's just an open discussion. I hope you enjoy.
Where do you want to start, Max? You want to just ask you a question? What were you thinking the whole time?
I felt like I grabbed onto the idea of the observation spot pretty early on, and I kind of stuck with that in my head. And then when I heard about the masturbatory behavior, I mean, although Linus never said that that's what I implied from it, I was wondering if that needed to be targeted for reduction. But I couldn't really get a clear response onto how frequently it was happening. And based on her age, it kind of seemed like it wasn't necessarily the appropriate track to take. So then I pivoted back to Conrad. And when I did, I interacted with Ava, the intervention specialist, which was kind of a curveball because I didn't find the information I got from her super valuable, which may have been the point.
Yep, that's but, correct.
Threw me for a loop, and I really just thought, what are the steps we need to get to some semblance of social interaction as kind of the foundation for how is she going to engage with her caretakers in a way where she can ultimately work on these IEP targets in a productive, healthy way? And how can she build a relationship back with her parents after having free access to isolation?
So to you, that was the problem. The problem was social isolation and what yep. lack of what? Because I don't know why the IEP matters still. Or like why you're latching onto it.
I'm not latching onto it. I'm just thinking, and I was trying to kind of inquire with Conrad a bit about the can't do or won't do, because I think that, I mean, when you're looking at escape maintain behavior like this.
Is it escape maintained? That's an interesting point. Is it escape maintained?
I mean, the maladaptive behavior is, I'd say. Yeah.
Which one?
The she hit, the breaking stuff. I mean, escape to access adult time.
Oh, so you think she was intentionally doing that so she'd go back and be by herself to self-stimulate?
Not necessarily self-stimulate, but I think that was paired with it.
Interesting.
In all fairness, Max, we were trying to steer you towards an escape function initially, but it kind of takes cool. different turns as things kind of happen, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
What are you thinking, Dimitri?
I mean, I think escape is an obvious answer. I don't know necessarily I would characterize it that way.
How would you characterize it?
I would probably think of it more as like a social avoidance, which is a type of escape per se, but when you anchor social avoidance within the context of the anxiety and within the context of like possible trauma history and it being kind of rooted around all the people being around at any given point in time, I don't know if you would necessarily treat it as an escape maintained behavior in the typical behavior analytic fashion that you would.
I tried to kind of stray away from what I felt would be a traditional approach to escape maintained behavior. It was definitely about increasing the social interaction more right. so than decreasing.
You really slow rolled that though. You weren't really trying to push it too hard, huh? Why'd you want to slow roll it so hard?
What do you mean? Just having her interact with people again?
No, that's fine. More like the way that you structured the intervention initially, where it's like they come in, they sit, and they just stare at her or whatever. They don't necessarily engage. And then like you build it up.
Because I know that, I mean, at this point, Linus doesn't really want Conrad coming around at all anymore. So we got to have a few small successes to kind of get Linus's buy-in. And I mean, it sounds like the residential facility didn't have the resources to deal with her. So it's all about the slow burn.
Ooh. My question to you is that your problem?
I mean,
resources matter in our decision-making and our recommendations, but certain kinds of resources seem to be, there should be institutional problems that need to be dealt with. Like their short-staffedness shouldn't restrict this young lady's ability to access the necessary interventions she needs and also access her parents. Seemed a little unreasonable yeah. that a third party facility charged with her basic care would feel, let's just say, emboldened to engage in gatekeeping access to her from her parents. That seems like an overstep in my mind.
I agree, but I think there was some emotional manipulation on the residential facility towards Conrad, where Conrad was able to empathize with them as a residential facility. And I, as a guy who's trying to get to a Modest Mouse show, I'm not trying to.
Max is just trying. He's floating on.
Apathetic behavior analyst. Apathetic. No. Like you weren't there to actually help.
No, I'm
just checking boxes. You can barely get to your show, bro.
I understand that there's bigger foundational issues with the facility that she was at, but I mean, if we're coming in and we're looking at the resources we got, that's what I'm working with.
Let's look at this of like that medical model is like you might have a prescription that is going to work amazingly for an affliction, and you can say that, and maybe they can't afford it or insurance won't cover it, and you have to choose more of a mid-tier generic scenario. So it might not be your obligation to make accommodations for the residential facility, but don't you have to meet them where they're at to encounter some level of success of saying, oh, I don't care, man, you have to staff.
Like, yeah, man, moderation in all things, though. Moderation in all things. I mean, like,
this guy walked into a dude who called him because the residential facility said your kid acts too wild when you're here, so you can't come here anymore, at least for the foreseeable time, for the immediate future. Like that, the setup of this whole scenario to me was egregious. And in my mind, a big reason why you were called, well, not you, the proverbial you, you know what I mean? The person was called in the situation was to act in an advocacy role too a little bit. And that's where it's like being able to walk the line between what you describe, Dave, as like our obligation to play the resource allocation game, right? Where, what are our resources and our tools that we can play with and how do we maximize them and use them as efficiently as possible? I absolutely agree with you. However, on the flip side.
But where in Ohio are they located again?
I don't know if it's a real place.
Okay.
Waterville?
If we're going with Ish in the city name, then I think it's fair to say that they've got pretty limited resources. And that's what I was trying to navigate. Man, but
does limited resources means that someone can't see their kid?
I mean, they can see their kid.
No, they can't. They were told they weren't allowed to. Or they were being strongly encouraged not to, shall we say.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's messed up. But it's just trying to reunite a family.
I know. I'm just like, anyway.
Here's the question is when you look at the thing that Dimitri's talking about, where it's like, what is this extra step or after extra role that you might have to assume when you're the final word in the situation or you're called into it? Where does that skill come up? Is it just experience? Like, the task list doesn't necessarily approach that. So if we're looking at who the audience of this is individuals who are behavior analysts who want to build those skills, those soft skills in between that help make you an expert, where's the beginning gateway for that?
I typed this in our conversation queue where we go back and forth as we're prepping for this portion of it, but I mean, that was a legal scenario with a legal answer. Okay. No, whether or not someone's in a residential facility or not, they have assigned guardians who have decision-making authority over their medical well-being and educational interventions and services. So if the parents are still the guardians per se, which we're going to assume that's the case in this situation, and she's a minor, then there is no legal reality on the planet Earth barred her immediate danger that anyone is entitled to keep them from being able to access her in any way, shape, or form. So
yeah, but
now hold on. So logistical questions aside, like it can't be a plan to intervene or control behavior or whatever. The plan can't be you can't see your guardian because that creates problems. Like in this scenario, the parents had to basically call and get that assistance. And had they not, what would have been the situation? It would have been indefinite.
Yeah.
It would have been their discretion.
I guess
it would have been at their decision making timeline. It would have been at their convenience at hiring. It would have been.
But did Linus ever say you can't come, or did he say you shouldn't?
I mean,
come?
Like, that's my point. My point is that's, and this is the part where it's like why we go back to this whole idea of distinguishing between like what is our role as advocates versus what is our role as behavioral consultants, and when do those two things coincide and meet, right? And we're talking about developing these skills, and that's being able to differentiate between not just, this is our ethical obligations to advocate for our client. This is our moral obligation, in my mind, as a person to repair familial relationships and facilitate familial interactions and positive, healthy parent-child interactions. But also like bringing institutions into the fold of better, clear, more transparent ethical work. I think the fact that this was a residential facility or a home structure like this is a great example, because these things are kind of a black box to a lot of people in our field, because they operate it as a bizarre funding source. They operate, you know, with really unsophisticated, lowly trained staff that are really low paid. They're super high turnover jobs. And they're usually very much treated as kind of like throwaway babysitting services that are either really toxic, do-nothing environments, abusive, or kind of gatekeeping in terms of like obfuscating, divulging information about what's going on behind closed doors. So like in my personal experience, residential facilities, I have never had a good interaction with a residential facility or a group home. Like I've never seen one where I walked out and I was like, wow, that was impressive. Now, I'm sure I'm going to say this.
I was actually kind of surprised by Linus because
we're going to release this. And of course we'll get the 8,000 comments. Like I work at one that's so amazing. And it's like, I'm sure you do. You're the one person who works at
the best.
The working title that I have right now is Fears of Long-Term Residential Treatment because of
that. For real though. Like that's the whole idea. The whole idea is like the idea of institutional gatekeeping and institutional barriers is especially as we see kids transition to adolescence and with severe behavior problems or severe behavior cases, that's a big part of our job that you don't know and you don't learn in school. And it's like, how do you push through institutional gatekeeping and barriers while still maintaining, number one, some semblance of a working relationship with these people because you can't burn those bridges. But on the other hand, also maintaining your professional integrity and your obligation towards your client. So it's like you're walking a tightrope between these three impossible scenarios. And I mean, honestly, like you just encountered, Max, while you were doing this and working your way through it, like it depending on what your disposition is, you're either going to want to plow through it, in which case, like you have someone like me early on in their career who doesn't care about people's feelings, and in which case that made me a very unliked person in those circles. And that's that stereotypical know-it-all BCBA persona that people, you know, seem to harp on. Or on the flip side, they have kind of a scenario like the way you presented, where my mind actually is an overcorrection, where it's like you're over accommodating those needs and trying to make sure that everybody's okay and stuff, and trying to over mediate the situation. And I think there's a little bit more of a middle road where a little clearer directness would be appropriate. Like their discomfort is like not your problem, man. Like, sorry, like it's not, their inconvenience is not your problem. Now, I mean, it matters. They're human beings. You should care. And their safety matters too. You don't want to create the conditions of crisis, right? So that's another thing that matters. Like, it's not an unreasonable request for them to be like, don't come in here and throw a grenade in the middle of our living room and just feel like you can walk away, because that's not a cool thing.
Please, we do not get paid enough.
We make $9.60 an hour, bro. Okay, like, not cool. So for sure you want to respect that and not be that guy, but I don't know if there you can't slow roll too much and you can't be too accommodating, because then it becomes this like circle of complacency that I think in real life becomes like a problem, self-defeating. It doesn't really serve the client.
Dimitri, you said too many good things in a row there, but I want to harken back and reemphasize a couple things you said, which is when we're advocating for this, it comes down to that paragraph one, who is the client?
Yeah, 100%.
Because it's that accommodation, but also it's how do we connect that family, which became Max's priority through that. And the other part you mentioned, which is what is our there? We have to navigate these institutions that have worked in these, you labeled it gatekeeping strategies. So when we are planning and we're working with these students, having that long-term picture of what we are training and building skills for, having that be a potential outcome. So that also comes down and harkens the idea of social significance of like, how are we using the time we have while funding is freely available for minors that are not for adults, to really prioritize skills that are going to stick. And I mean, a little bit of me snuck out in Conrad for a part of echoing what people have said in ABA clinics, which is the things we need to prioritize are the things that keep the client safe. So self-care skills, things like that, communication that are going to prevent opportunities for individuals taking advantage of these kinds of clients. And that became a big focus of things we've done, of work we've done previously, because that is what is socially significant. How do we prevent them from being taken advantage of in their future?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one. That's a big one. Yeah, I mean, in the sexualized behavior, actually, I read it as a red herring. That's kind of why I had Linus hyper-focus on
it. That's what it was.
You know, I was trying, I think it was a thing to throw you off the trail of the real problem.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if she's like,
She doesn't hit to go self-stim. She just happens to enjoy self-stimming while she's in her dark little cave, I imagine.
Gotcha.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you, how about this? I'll ask you. You asked us a question about pacing. What made you feel the need to ask us whether or not the pacing was moving at the particular clip that you were, like, obviously something, your own intuition told you that maybe it wasn't quite right, not quite right.
I think we've explored with a couple different time durations throughout these last few episodes, and I know that getting to the point sooner than later has kind of been the preference, and when I looked at the clock, it seemed like we were pretty far in.
Oh, I see. So you were just more governed by length of podcast, not necessarily by the way your questions were being, the conversation was going.
Oh, no. I probably would have had the conversation longer if it wasn't really? Podcast.
Oh, man. I was ready to get a pillow out and nap, bro. You had me, you had me lulled to sleep like a beautiful
hypnotist. I don't think so. I wasn't there. We'll see when I'm editing.
I'm going to give you a little bit of feedback just to think about. I think you should not be afraid to say what you think and ask the questions that you want to know the answers to. Like, for example, there was when you were asking about the sexualized questions, there was a lot of ambiguity in the way that you were asking those questions of Conrad directly, because you were trying to, I could tell at that point in time, you were like, this seems to be the problem, but you still weren't sure. You were trying to determine like how much of the problem is this, right?
Yeah.
Ask the question. Like, and this is the thing about sexualized behavior, self-stimulating behavior, whatever, self-pleasure. I mean, like, and maybe this is a me thing, but I think that we need to destigmatize that stuff with people with mental health and disabilities and that kind of stuff. And we need to be comfortable saying these things out loud in a way that everyone might not be ready to hear, and that they're normal people with hormones. Then they're going to take care of themselves just like literally every human ever born has. I mean, and it's a biological necessity, and they're biologically compelled to engage in those kinds of behaviors. And they're going to access the different ways to do that. And you should ask those questions. Do they use visual aids? Like, cause you were dancing around pornography, but you should have just said, does she use pornographic materials? Like, is there something like that going on? Does she have access to toys? Whatever. Because the thing is, with some adolescents, I've worked on a couple cases in the past where we actually were able to, you know, maybe tamper down the intensity of the sexualized behavior because it had gotten so out of control by introducing, you know, actual aids to help support them in doing that functionally. For example, like, you know, a fleshlight intervention, you know, that seems like a thing where you're like, wow, you would use a fleshlight as an intervention. Well, yeah, if you have someone who's engaging in compulsive masturbation and they're breaking furniture and stuff because they're humping them profusely, but you want to redirect that behavior in a more functional way, and you're not going to try to, you know, dehumanize that person and turn them into an asexual being, which they're not, then maybe introducing a tool to help guide them to do that is a reasonable accommodation to support them in that, and teaching them environmental discrimination and where you do those things privately and what tools you use to do those to get your release, you know? So like, and those questions, don't be afraid of them. They're hard. Yeah. First, but you know,
it wasn't so much asking the questions as not that I saw the red herring, but I wasn't getting enough of a read from Linus to know if me telling this to Conrad was at all accurate. In the sense that, I mean, I know we agreed Linus was an okay narrator, but I mean, adult time, Cinemax at night, she just goes in her room, and it's like, I mean, it... I couldn't tell if it was an issue or not. Linus, I couldn't tell if it was a 17-year-old.
I can tell you, Linus, Max is like, going to be taking his writing next time very seriously.
Linus was, in my mind, I visualized the stereotypical beaten, overworked, haggard, you know, blue collar, honest person who's just, they don't have the sensitivities to the BS to sit there and do the tap dance of like formal language and that kind of a thing, you know?
Well, and that's,
and they just,
that's kind of why I was,
say what they, what's going on, and they are nonchalant about everything because they've learned and been conditioned that if they just downplay and don't react, they're not going to have some guy like us or lady like us or whatever person like us come in and give them a new laundry list of shit to do that they might not do they're never going to get coaching on, and no one's ever going to come back and collect the data anyway.
Well, I think that because he was a blue collar guy who doesn't really have a ton of experience in the field, if she was like a compulsive masturbator 24/7, he would have been a bit more on the nose about it. Like, holy shit, she's doing it all the time.
So let's focus then on the social avoidance piece of this then. I guess we kind of already asked about the slow roll. How would you normally treat that? Because they're recommended, I mean, and I'll just, I don't want to out Dave and Ryan, but, and if you guys want to talk about this, Dave, because you have a better case on this. Like, it seems like they thought you would have gone on an SBT ride. Why not that road?
Because I'm not trying to advertise for another company.
Because I don't need to advertise for a systematic desensitization program that I can just write myself. I love it, dude.
To be fair, we wrote it in as like you might have a communication focus piece on there in some way, and that might have been one of the methods.
Yeah, and I definitely think it would have gotten there. I just thought that the sheer exposure was going to
be. Yeah, you started a good place for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on this.
Oh shoot, what was the question again? I had a follow up.
SBT or communication as an avenue to start
versus the exposure as a selection.
Gotcha. You gave me the answers. What was the question?
The question was like, why not go down that road other than the advertising thing?
Honestly, my brain was going back to episode one quite a bit, and I was just thinking of that slow introduction to people being around and shaping that. There wasn't really a reason I didn't go the functional communication route. Like I said, ultimately the goal would be to get there. But
An honest answer, brother. It's an honest answer. I mean, sometimes you just follow your intuition, right? Sometimes we don't have the perfect technical response to these things. That's fair.
Yeah.
Not to mention, if you had to give a perfect generated response. Case that we threw at you. All right. So
if you had to give a perfectly technical response, though, what would it be?
Don't have a good answer. I'm not your
textbook
lie.
Definite. You don't like a textbook answer to this. Anybody want to take a stab? Dave, what would be your textbook answer to it?
Of just why we wouldn't take the SBT route, or like why that would be a good route to take.
So, I mean, the intuition was to start with a systematic desensitization or like exposure program to the parents, soften her up, and then slowly increase their interactions with her over time. Okay, fine. That's a pretty big slow roll. It's not crazy or illogical. It's just a pretty early point to pull on before you move forward. So like what would be a more direct approach, or even just maybe even a little less slow approach, a little more rapid approach?
I mean, I would maybe scope it up from sitting on the couch to it does fall in that repairing process. I would love to throw a communication piece in there, although I do think the termination criteria of she hit is something that you could shape an existing vocal response, because she has limited vocal responses, into a separate escape response if we wanted to. But if she's building relationships, and this might be because I helped.
I mean, you have all the nitty gritty details in your head because you wrote the scenario. Sure. So I mean, like, obviously it's cheating compared to what Max said, but I mean, like, it's not cheating.
Keep reading the answer key, Dave. But I
mean, like, yeah.
You still have an. You
Someone's
still have
jealous
a clinical,
they didn't get the
you
link
still have
yet.
A clinical opinion. And that's the whole point. Like, so what is your clinical opinion?
I think we look at the relationships that are currently going well, which are the individuals who are showering her, who are giving her food, who are able to somewhat exist in the space with her, and look at reconditioning. It would be repairing family pieces, providing them value and making them the givers of good again. Now, I would love to have a communication response in there that can get rid of us if you want, or add access to things. In fact, I think that communication is usually the route to go and needs to be incorporated to some extent. But I understand Max's hesitations because of the staffing requirements. And I know that you might not like that as much, Dimitri, but I think finding that middle ground of what is feasible and helps individuals contact reinforcement and success so that you can gain ownership over their behaviors to a certain extent.
What you thought, bro? Dang.
That's fine. It's not, I, no, I mean, because it counters things yeah, you yeah, said.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, I don't think you, it's wrong. I don't think so, it's wrong. I think, listen, man, I agree. Look, I think that what you first started with is where I would think is the more technical answer. I think the technical answer is you start with the immediate variables and proximity. So, like, if you're going to bring the parents in and you're not, you don't have a plan for how you're going to be changing the dynamic in the household with the staff, it's pointless. Like, that, at that point, it's just like, you're just playing nice guy and offering everybody something, some candy that they might like, but you're not really going to get anything out of it. There's no juice there to squeeze. So, I mean, sure. Like, so I think, I mean, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah. I think part of that is conditioning, but there's also portions of that are, how do we help this individual? Cause I feel like where you're going with that is some level of collaborative leisure as well. And how do we help this individual, Charmin, encounter some new activities or provide her access to new activities that maybe gives more value to people as well? And I think that's more of a long-term goal and maybe not a quick phone call to get someone in, but I think to make more meaningful outcomes for the rest of her life, sleeping under a blanket fort by herself for however many decades might not be the best avenue. So
I'm 32 years in and it's going great.
you at least have lights in your blanket Max. Fort, Max.
Christmas lights. No one wants to go into that blanket fort.
But I think that when we look at quality of life and social significance, that programs for long term by giving people value, because that needs to.
This
have
is a weird
value.
Case.
I mean, a random
random rolls. We'll do
the
that.
Randomness is so it really makes this funky, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure we does. Literally look at.
Variables. I don't know. I feel like I've met a Charmin before.
Yeah, it's not that crazy, actually. The more I think about it, but still, it was enough bizarre complexity where you got to be careful not to. One thing that dawned on me that I just wanted to comment on is that, like, I just think you got to find the problem out faster. Like, the initial part of this process, if we were to start stepping this out as like a teaching exercise and trying to get people to think about their own process and how they do these things, it's like your job needs to get to the problem as soon as possible. And part of that is figuring out what everyone else thinks is the problem so that you can start really getting everybody where you need them to go once you actually have a hypothesis. And I think that's the one thing I would say, that this was at least when you asked the pacing problem, like I was going to be like what my gut was that led you to feel like your pacing was off, is that you weren't getting a nice continual feed of useful information. You were just getting a lot of information with no clear, clear relationships between it and interconnectivity that actually started framing a clear narrative and story for you. So, like, my thing would be like, when you're doing this kind of a process and you're doing this kind of like robust interview and observation and all that stuff, like, you have to go in and you have to think about it as, you're a detective, but you're also an author, and you're trying to write a narrative story to construct this profile of this person with cohesive aspects, with where each aspect is cohesive and interplaying with itself. So if your interaction with the people involved and the questions that you're asking and the follow-ups and where you're kind of driving them isn't giving you like good fact, good fact, good fact, good fact, good fact, like you're not quite controlling the conversation to the degree that you need to be controlling the conversation. The one feedback, that's the thing. Like, I would say, like, man, better conversational control and limiting options and doing a lot more. Well, is it more like this or is it like this? Is it more like this? Is it more like this? And like really limiting people's choices. And you start, cause you start out with a nice open-ended thing, like what's going on. And that's just to get the juices flowing, but you should really look to start paring down really fast into specific limiting decision questions to where you're zeroing one people where they to get the outcome, the particular variables you're trying to extract.
You mentioned something which I feel like is a little bit of a, it's not a hiccup, it's something we're going to figure out as we do this, but the power of observation is like, yeah. We have all trained in a very specific skill set to be able to notice the nuances that happen outside of the B in that equation. What are the specific antecedents? What are the consequences that happen as a result of the behavior? And doing this, like, Max had an issue because he wasn't sure if Linus was a reliable witness. And like the value of observation and actually being able to see it for itself, it's not always guaranteed, but you can get so much information that can guide those conversations out of just seeing the client.
Yeah, but I mean, yes, you need observation. But I think that it's incorrect to not characterize or to not think of those other conversations as observations as well. You're just looking for different types of cues in people's behavior. You're looking for shifts in the chair. You're looking for obfuscation. You're looking for hesitancy in people's responses. You're looking for signs of deception. You're looking for maybe signs of exaggeration. So you're doing an observation. It's an active observation as you're doing these ancillary indirect interviews as well that actually that should inform and make it easier for you to be able to determine how reliable a person is to informing what you're trying to do and what kind of hypothesis you're trying to form. So I hear you in that, like, we make these distinctions between direct and indirect observations, and a direct observation, the behavior is irreplaceable, et cetera, et cetera. However, on the flip side of that, going back to that holistic idea of what we're trying to accomplish here and like the type of clinical decision-making we want to promote is that, like, you can't have a narrative on the one hand where all these different stakeholders matter in the equation, but using the information that they provide you is kind of with a grain of salt because all that really matters is what the person's got going on. No, what the person has going on is the primary focus in terms of what you're trying to alter, change, intervene on, help, correct, teach to, whatever. But all the observations of those ancillary characters' behaviors as you're interacting with them are what inform and how you would structure an effective intervention to get to what you want. So those are also observations as well, is the kind of,
that's almost your gauge of where you can allocate your resources. When we look at allocating your resources for things, that's seeing how powerful these,
and we don't often
call them tools, but how powerful these tools are around them.
Linus is kind of a tool.
It was a total tool. Like, well, no, he just didn't give a shit. He just didn't care about anything, right? He just didn't care. He was like, whatever, bro. Yeah. You're just another dude that's going to show up here and never come back. Who cares? Yes, tool. Yes. You know? So anyway, all right, well, what else did we get? Everything.
If you're earning BACB CUs and following along, your code word is going to be conversational control. Again, for those earning BACB CEUs from our website, your code word is conversational control. Just head over to our website, explanatoryfiction.com, and you can finish that process there. Again, it is conversational control. The views expressed during the Explanatory Fiction podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the official policy or position of any other agency, organization, employer, or company. Assumptions made in the analysis are not reflective of any position of any other entity other than the authors, and since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to revision, change, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity. This podcast is to educate and inform, provide discussion, and does not constitute professional advice. Remember again that the variables in this case were randomly generated, as well as the name and the episode imagery. Thank you, math. Thank you, science. And thank you, artificial intelligence. Rhino LLC is an approved continuing education provider that is ACE number hashtag OP-19-3037, and the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, also known as the BACB, a registered trademark, does not sponsor or approve or endorse Rhino LLC, the materials, information, or sessions identified herein. Thank you for listening.